take at Madison Square Garden last October. You can see the contrast in their styles. The speedy Ray Robinson up on his toes, the dancing master, LaMotta the brawler, Jose Blackwood, and most of the time. Now we...
again. So, them tell we say Christopher Columbus discovered Jamaica and this part of the world. Well, Most people know I say not go so. We agree with that. But we really understand how is it that a one guy come clear across us all and decide say him is the founder of so much islands when he was nothing in Europe. And Europe was almost like a, what they would call a backward place before the Moors enter into Granada in Spain. It wasn't really any high quality life. Christopher Columbus born in a place named Genoa in Italy. And he was a sail upon the ship them from Portugal. And we must remember that the Portuguese is one of the first European countries to enslave African people. Don't forget that. The Portuguese were the first European country to enslave, well, and I said the first, one of the first to really enslave Africans. And Christopher Columbus was on those ships that used to venture into Europe, into Africa. Christopher Columbus. When Christopher Columbus got to Spain, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. Why we are telling this story is because something happened that we miss in the history when we talk about 1492. Because that is really what them give it. 1492, Christopher Columbus come across us all and really create havoc amongst the indigenous people. And when them tell you, say, the Arawaks or the Tainos were the first people to inhabit here. But Africans was here too. Africans was here too. Africans was here thousands of years before Christopher Columbus come here. So, in the Americas, as they would call it, Africans ventured into these parts of the world thousands of years. Anyway, the man named Christopher Columbus wanted to go to India. India, he wanted to go. And he needed some ship, but he couldn't get the ship them. So he go to King Ferdinand, Queen Isabella, to get the ship them, for venture. And he get three ships, but he couldn't get nobody to come with him. Because the Europeans thought that if you go too far out in the sea, you'd fall off. Because you have some people that know what talk about the world flat, the earth flat, and all them foolishness there. But him thought, and the people them in Europe thought, that the further you go to the horizon, it's far, you're going to file off, you're going to see some beasts and all these things. Well, Christopher said he want to take the chance. Because he said he can't travel west to go east, not knowing that what goes around come around. And it's really India and the adventure out to go, but he must travel in the other way. So Christopher Columbus got into the prisons in Spain and take out the murderers and the thieves and the pedophiles and all these people and promise them land if they would go with him. Well, if you promise me gold and free freedom from the jail, me take the chance. So a whole heap of people take the chance and go with him on the tree ship them. But what them don't tell you that there were Moors on the ship. There were African people on the ship. The chief navigators on these ships was Moors, because them know about navigation. They developed navigation years ago. Long time them developed navigation. Well, Christopher Columbus venture out, and somehow him lose point, him lose direction, and him end up in a this part of the world. But the reason why we are telling this story is not the Columbus voyage we are telling about. It's 1492. What was taking place in Europe in 1492? There's a thing named the Inquisition. A lot of you might not know what is the Inquisition. The Inquisition is when the king and queen of Spain decides that anybody that is not with the papacy, with Pope, is heretics, so they should be burned to death, crucified or hanged. So there was an actual spy thing a go on for anybody where them feel, say, was part of this. conspiracy against Christendom, because Europe is just the idea them call it Europe, the name Christendom. But guess what now? It was really against the Moors and the Jews, because the Moors and the Jews never accept the papacy. So these inquisitions was against the Jews and against the Moors, the Muslims, as we call them. So in 1492, them start this inquisition. The inquisition is people, is a system where them call the inquisitors. You know, you don't say you're inquisitive. You're inquisitive means they set people to watch you, to see what you was doing. For instance, you know, so the nation of is the nation of people who call themselves Muslims. Them pray 5 times a day. And if a man next door look over and see you pray 5 times a day, I'm going to say, yes, see there? He's not a part of the paper. Say, you're not, you're fighting against Rome. So they would inquire, call the inquisitor, and he would inquire if you are part of this thing. And this would lead to your prosecution and death. So this was something that was taking place right over Europe, where anyone that was found with a different religious perspective would be put to death by the authorities that call themselves the inquisitors or the inquisition set up there to deal with these situations. So what they wanted to do was to run out all the Africans out of Spain. And then the Inquisition continued further into Europe. So you have other inquisitors and Inquisition develop to the point where now there was a lot of burning of people. Imagine that. They were burning people at the stake because they found out that you was not part of the Roman Catholic Empire. And not only that, we went in Holland. There is a torture museum. And if you see the torture, the things that them usually do. And the weirdest thing about it, you know, is that them do this. They ask you if you are with the Pope. And them torture you to the point where you have to say you is with the Pope. And then them kill you. Because them say them will have to torture you too much for you say it. The Inquisitors, the Inquisition, and why you remember that? The Inquisition, a time in Europe when African people was hunted because of their religious perspective. And up to this day, we see that taking place, not at Panda level there, but we see the church, the Roman Catholic Church, even in Canada the other day, they found 200 odd graves of young children who were supposed to be culturally brainwashed into believing in Jesus Christ to give up their indigenous culture. That is what they took the children them away for. They took them away from the nation and put them in some places where they could brainwash the people them into their religious perspective. And now we find that it is coming out more and more and more and more. And they will keep finding these things because this is something that Europe has continuously done. Make you feel say what they are doing is the right and proper thing. And hide the atrocities that they do, not only to other people, but to themselves. Because World War I and World War II was fought not as a world war, and as Europe, as the tribes of Europe fighting against the tribes of Europe. It was nothing else. We're never involved in a world war. Just like how them said, the World Series. It's only America involved in the World Series. Nobody else, nothing there. I'm pretty sure presumptuous them is. Them farmer game named the World Series, and it's only America involved in it. Out. Yeah, this is Muta Baruka. I want to introduce you to a different style of programming from the media. We call it Ras Internet That Today. I want you to log on to it because you'll be pleasantly surprised. Ras Internet That Today provides you with all different perspectives, knowledge, psychology, philosophy, history, social things, religion things. So we want you to tune into it. Ras, RASSS Internet That Today. Irie.
Well, let me hear you say, Mountain, Mountain.
TV.
change my mind. Oh no, baby, I've changed my
Shines your love bright shine. Yeah. Always rise above disappointments and just keep on trying on. Lonely streets we trap together, singing songs of joy and praise, holding precious meditation, praising Jah with all my heart. So I sing glory, glory to the Father. Come on, let us praise His name. Yeah. To the Master, come on, help me shout His name. Yeah. Though we face great tribulations, we know we sure ain't giving up. With Jah Almighty as our leader, there ain't no battle we can't win. So I say glory, glory to the Father. Come on, let us praise His name. Yeah. Glory, glory to the Master. Come on, help me shout His name. Downhearted, rise and let your love light shine. Always rise above disappointments and just keep on traveling on. Cause lonely streets we tread together, singing songs of joy and praise, holding precious meditation, praising Jah with all my heart. So I say glory, glory to the Father. Come on, let us praise His name.
On the line, I have a friend of mine. This gentleman I've known for quite a number of years. When you're talking about the man behind the curtain, there's a picture of Henry Stone, because he's truly the man behind the curtain. And let me tell you about Mr. Henry Stone. He's been in the music business in Miami, Florida, for over 50 years. He's on many record labels such as Alston, Brownstone, Cat Records, Chart Records, Dave Records, Dash Records, Gladys Records, Glory Records, Martin Records, Rockin', and Weird World. Some of the different sounds that you've heard down over the years, the Miami sound, Southern Soul, Disco, TK Records, TK Productions, and a whole bunch of folks like Timmy Thomas, T Connection, Peter Brown, Foxy, George McRae, Betty Wright, Bobby Caldwell, and Casey and the Sunshine Band. Introducing folks, the legendary Henry Stone. Hey, Henry.
Hey, Henry.
How you doing, sir?
How you doing in Pittsburgh?
We're doing good. We're doing good.
What's my name? I'm in Miami. Miami's like pretty cool right now.
It's cool in Miami?
Yeah, it's like 90 degrees.
90 degrees. Now, Mr. Stone, you're about, what, 91 now?
92, as of 2 weeks ago.
Oh, well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Belated birthday.
Okay. 92. And you've been doing this for about 50 years, working in the music business.
About 67 years.
67 years.
Yeah.
Most of your life, you've been in the music business.
Since I got out of the Army.
Uh-huh.
I was in the Army band in Canton, New Brunswick, New Jersey. And actually, Amos was the first integrated Army band in 1944-45.
Oh, okay.
And I got out of the Army, and I went out into the music business. I was in the music business a little. I was a musician before. I was sort of moving around in the music business before I got in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got out, I entered into the music business, and then there was no music business because there were no records.
Ah.
But during World War II, you couldn't get shellac, you know, records. And the 78 records were made of shellac, you know. Uh-huh. So the record business didn't start up until about 1946, when I got out of the Army, and I started early with Modern Records. I don't know if you remember with Modern Records and Aladdin Records. They were old labels, you know?
So back in 1946, that's when they first started pressing vinyl?
Yeah, 1946. No, vinyl, not shellac. Not vinyl yet.
I was still shellac.
Vinyl didn't come into existence until about 1950.
Oh, okay. Wow. So Aladdin Records, I know Little Richard was on that label.
He's my specialty, Little Richard.
Okay, he's our specialty.
Yeah, Amos Milburn was our biggest star on Aladdin Records.
So who were some of the earlier folks that you had a chance to work with back then, Mr. Stone?
Well, back then, again, it was Cadet Records, there was Slim and Slam, if that meant anything, Mad Records. They had B.B. King, but that was a little later.
Mm-hmm.
It found Mad Records at B.B. King, maybe in the 50s, you know?
So how did you first meet Ray Charles?
Well, I moved to Miami about 1947, you know, 48. Mm-hmm. And Ray Charles was going to the St. Augustine, you know, Above the Blind in St. Augustine.
Uh-huh.
And I was in Jacksonville for a few months, and I heard about him. I heard about this great blind singer, you know. And then about 1950, I understand, in 1949 and 50, when he got out, Ray Charles went to Seattle and recorded for a label up there in Seattle. It didn't do too well. And he came to Miami about 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And he was gigging around trying to get a gig. And I was sitting at the bar with Sam Cooke, a great friend of Sam Cooke. At the Mary Elizabeth Hotel in Miami with Sam Cooke. And he introduced me to Ray Charles. I said, yeah, I heard about you, man. I heard about you when you went to the school of the blind, and we started to do. And he said, look, man, I could use a gig. He said, I heard you're the record man there. I said, yeah, I got a little studio. So in 1951, I recorded 4 sides with Ray Charles.
Okay.
Well, Ray came into the studio and did his session with me. And we started, I said, let's go over the material. And he started to sing like Nat King Cole. I said, no, I need some blues, man. You know, that King Cole is not King Cole. You're Ray Charles, and I heard you sing some blues and you're great. So I recorded 4 sides, even including St. Pete, Florida Blues, and a few other, three other sides. It didn't do great then because he was only Ray Charles, a musician.
Uh-huh.
Until later on, I happened to hook Ray Charles up with Atlantic. 1952 or 53.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then the rest became history.
So, did you know Jesse Stone as well?
Who is that?
Jesse Stone.
Jesse Stone?
Yeah, Jesse Calhoun.
Yeah, but I didn't have too much to do with him. Uh-huh. In 1955, I got involved with James Brown. I found James Brown.
Uh-huh.
And through the years, through his passing, I was like his godfather. I was like James Brown's godfather.
Yeah, I met Mr. Brown on several occasions. Really great, great person.
Oh, what a such a great character, man. People just love him, you know?
You know, and to watch him on stage, let me tell you this story, and you probably have seen this before. Whenever there were other musicians that were playing like at a festival or something like that, and James Brown got ready to play, everyone stopped what they were doing to go watch James Brown perform.
Well, that's how great he was. He was just fantastic.
You know, and the way he did everything, the way he led the band, you know, the way he gave the band their cues, all that stuff, you know, was like, wow. He was really something else.
And you can't explain, you just expressed it now.
Yeah.
Exactly what he was, man. Just as a person, because I was really personally, you know, we used to travel together. And, I mean, you couldn't beat him. He was just so great, man. I sure miss him. I really did. Even through the years, he used to call me every couple of months, you know. And he let me put a record out without him telling him on me and letting me hear it. We became that close, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing, but there's a Larry King interview with James Brown on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And James Brown's getting with Larry King, and he tells Larry King how I was his partner, and how I found him, and how important I was to his life. And it's really something else. You know, you can say it, I can say it and read it, but hearing it from James Brown is really a trip, you know?
Right.
With Larry King, he's talking about Henry Stone.
Man, I've been a member of Soul Patrol since its inception. And if you folks don't know, it's at
www.soulpatrol.com.
Yeah, Bob Davis is one of my good college friends who I went to University of Pittsburgh with.
What a writer he is, man. That guy's such a writer.
Oh, yeah, he's a great writer.
I think he's still the best, man. I read his material, I sit there and I either cry or laugh or do something, you know?
But let's talk about the record promotion business. Let's talk about that a little bit, because you just wrote a book about that back in April, that you released a book about that.
Yeah.
Now, people need to know about TK Productions. Talk a little bit about TK Productions, Henry.
Well, TK, you know, he had 27 gold and platinum records in the 70s, including six with Casey and the Sunshine Band, and then Funky Nassau, and Betty White with Pulling Up Women, George McCray, of course, with the number one disco record in the world, with Rock Your Baby, Gwen McCray with Rockin' Chair, and Timmy Thomas with White Can't Live Together, and she had to go on and on, my God.
A lot of stuff. Little Beaver and
Beaver was just wonderful. And it just goes on and on, you know, which maybe know more about than I do.
Because back then, I mean, back in the 70s, back in the early 70s, I was in college, and of course, I was back partying back then. So I was listening to like a lot of these different records of a lot of these different artists. You know,
Lattimore, let's straighten it out.
Oh, yeah, Lattimore, let's straighten it out, yeah.
Which I'm still recording. I just put out a CD with Lattimore. Lattimore remembers Ray Charles. I just got a CD with him. It's really terrific.
Yeah, I just saw that. I'll probably be getting that pretty soon, too.
And the singer is Hit the Road Jack, and it's with Gwen McCray and her two daughters.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Gwen McCray just, had a stroke about 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Well, let's hope she has a speedy recovery.
Oh, she's recovering now in Pensacola.
Okay, that's great. But how did you promote these records? I mean, what went through when you were trying to promote these records?
Well, I was always a great promotion man. And I always had great promotion people around me. Get my article. All of you know, it's in my article. I had people that work for me. But then, you know, took care of business. We took care of business in the 70s. Maybe people didn't like it, but we did what we had to do. Because I was a great believer in, you make a little, you give a little, you know?
And rewarding those who played your records on the air.
That's right. Everybody played our records. And the good thing about it, Amos, I tested both of my records here in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
And before I won the album, I promoted the master of the records or whatever.
Okay. So first you would try like all the local clubs first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, and radio. I had pretty control of Butterball down here and people like that on radio.
Okay. So Butterball was on the air down there back then.
Not
Joe Tamburo.
Okay. No, Butterball Smith, you know?
Okay. So what happened in the 50s with this whole payola scandal?
Well, there was two of them. There was one between the 50s and the other one, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then there was a later one. There was actually two of them, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to think of them, and I'm trying to separate the two of them because there was
one with Alan Freed, where Alan Freed was...
That was already in the 70s.
Okay.
That was in the 60s, but that was in the 70s. Alan Freed and Dick Clark.
Okay.
And it was all that bunch, you know?
But back then, trying to get a record played on the radio was like one hand washes the other.
Exactly, man. Again, that was my feeling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why should I make it all when you guys are playing the records, you know? So I did what I had to do to take care of business.
So in the promotion thing, you, like, would hook people up with cash and cars and other different things?
Yeah, I had about, I'd say, 10 guys on my list that I'd just say he's almost in the... They're all dead, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Like Robbie Jones and Perkins in Detroit and Purdue and Houston. And, you know, I took care of what had to be done to get these hit records exposed and played to the world, you know?
Yeah.
Because our records, in the 70s, when I got hot with TK, man, our records were number one all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't on only number one in Florida or New York or other countries. They were number one in every country in the world.
Yeah, from what I remember when I first started doing radio, they would take it off just like a rocket. They took off like a rocket, all those different songs. You know, you would see like, you hear Rock Me Baby all over the place, Clean Up Woman, you know, and so on and so forth. You know, one of my favorite tunes has always been Timmy Thomas, Rock It With Me Together. That is a fantastic song. And I started hearing that on AM radio. Let me see, was it the early 70s?
73, 1970.
Yeah, when I was still in high school. And I was hearing that on the AM stations, you know. And then the new progressive type FM station started playing it as well.
Well, it was number one on the pop charts.
Yeah.
It was number one on the R&B charts and then the pop charts.
Hmm. So you were talking to like your promotions people are talking to like a lot of people around the country. I mean, we had WAMO here in Pittsburgh, and I know a lot of your stuff was getting played on that station back then.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. I remember that was one of my favorite stations.
Okay. Yeah. So
I thought I know the name Fred Rector was my main promotion guy. You know.
Uh huh.
He's passed away, but he was great.
Yeah, I've known a few of the different promotion guys that worked out, like out of Cleveland and different places like that, that would come to visit us from time to time, you know, here in Pittsburgh to, like, you know, get the records out. I mean, that's what the promotion guys did. They worked very hard. They would visit each and every DJ in every city, you know, bring the product around and, like, get them to play those records on there.
Records on the air is a part of our business that people don't know about.
Right.
That's why I put this... See, I have a guy that's writing a book for me.
Uh-huh.
He's got 100,000 words now, you know? So he says, if you take this book and you just start with Henry Stone was born in the Bronx, and you read the dad, it don't mean nothing. He says, look at the public with something... That they're gonna be, wow, what is this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess when you read that book, it's only 13,000 words, you know? It's gonna be 3-4 other editions to continue to make a whole book out of it, you know?
Right.
Because I got a lot of stories to tell from 1947 to to 2013, you know?
If you go to Henry Stone, to henrystonerecords.com.
henrystonemusic.com.
There's a link to this book that he has out, and it's called Henry Tells the Whole Stone Cold Truth on Payola in the Music Business. You've got to check this out. He breaks it down for you, folks. I mean, he tells how it was done, how the promotion business worked, and how it's still working these days. You know, in a lot of different ways. I guess they just increase the technology or something.
That's the difference. I mean, it's the same thing. The hip hop promotion is the same. You know,
mm-hmm.
You got to go through the hip hop promotion, which I don't do too much right now. You know,
right?
Because I always stick in my catalog and then sort of working with Lattimore and a few other artists. Because you know, I can only do so much now.
Right.
I'm 92 years old.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it and loving it and having a great time, you know. In fact, I'm coming out with something. I'm finishing the studio tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story that's called that goes along with it. In 1976, after Casey had two number one records, he came to my office with his third record. You know, he sat down with my office people and said, to listen to.
Uh-huh.
And he said, listen to this record, and it was Shake, Shake, Shake Your Booty, you know?
Uh-huh.
And everybody looked at me and said, we can't put this record out. I said, what are you talking about? The record's coming out next week, you know? 4 weeks later, it's number one on every chart in the world, you know? No, what's happening is, let's say 40 years later, 38 years later, I'm coming out with a thing called Booty Shaking Time. I'm doing a whole album on booty shaking.
Okay.
Bouncing booty around the world.
All the booty songs.
Well, I'm telling Kevin, I'm just saying, you know, it's love.
Okay. I love him a lot.
Cool. The rapper is so cool, man. He's a collection between pop, four, and whatever it is. He's a cool, cool cat.
A lot of our listeners will be looking forward to that.
It's great. It really is. I mean, I'm getting such a kick out of listening. We're just doing the mixes now, you know. I got to go to the studio tomorrow and finish it.
Yeah.
And like, it's coming out like in about 2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
When you go to henrystonemusic.com and check things out, folks, there is a treasure chest full of music. It's music history. You got to go check it out. You can go online. You can order his book that he has. All right.
Great music, you know what I mean?
All the music. There's all kinds of music from artists that you know very, very well. You know.
Yeah, I'm just releasing a whole bunch of stuff like Pete Connection, Peter Brown, and then Glenn McCrae. Stuff that's never been released on CD. It's amazing. It's like you said, it's a treasure. It's a treasure chest. That's what I got to call it, treasure chest. Henry Stone's treasure chest. Really, you gave me a good line there, you know?
I should have copyrighted that.
That's right.
I told you. You're something else, Mr. Stone. But I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to our listeners today.
What else you got to know about the music business?
We'll get you back on another time because we're almost out of time right now.
Oh, everybody's saying I could have been on the road with you for a while.
But I'll get you back on real soon, and we'll have some further discussions. How about that?
That sounds fantastic, man.
All right, thanks, Mr. Stone. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you.
Okay.
It's great.
Okay.
Thanks.
The legendary Henry Stone, the man is something else. There's all kinds of stories that he could tell. He's talking to me on the phone about a lot of different things. But you got to go check out this book about the whole Payola thing. And what he said is right. It's still going on today, but he talks about how they did it. You know, it's very, very interesting. That's this week on the Ebony Spectrum. We'll return next Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Dr. Davis. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Thanks, John.
What's that? What time?
I got a call from Sid Nathan, and he said, Henry, there's an artist up here in Macon, Georgia. Basically, James was from Augusta, but he was in Macon at the time. And I heard about an artist that has a little record that they're playing on an acetate that they're playing on a radio, and they're getting some action. I want you to go down and pick up the record. You can put it on your deluxe label, you know? I said, fine. I got into my Buick from Miami and started riding up to Macon. And at the same time, I have to pick up this record that Sid Nathan told me about, you know, this acetate, the song. And what happened is Ralph Bass, who was his Federal record A&R person, King had Federal Records, King Records, and with me and Deluxe Records. And Ralph was just an A&R man working for King. And he called Ralph at the same time, who was in Birmingham, Alabama, for some reason or whatever. And he got over to Macon a day before I did. And he sent the acetate up to Sid Nathan. And the record came out on Federal. And I got to Macon, and I saw James Brown. And I told him, I was up there through Sid to collect the record. And we had a laugh, and he said, well, I sent it up to Sid already. And I said, okay. And I saw him do a little show up there. I said, wow, James, you're going to have a hit. The song was Please, Please, Please. I said, James, forget it, man. When I go on a road with my Hearts of Stone, I'm going to take this record with me to promote it. And James Brown, whatever the reason was, never forgets anything. And then the next 2 weeks after the record broke, when I stopped breaking the record, I brought him down here to the Palms of Hollandale, a black nightclub here in Miami. And I told the owner, I said, look, this guy's going to have a big hit record, man. You better get him now. And he brought James in for $500 or so, you know. And the group went on. And that weekend, you couldn't get near the place. Well, down here in Florida right away, because I got the record played on the radio immediately, you know. Please, 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 my jockeys went right on it, that I kind of like cultivated. And so consequently, he says, can I get this guy back, man? He's great. I says, yeah, but you better come up with some money, man. And so I got him an extra $5,000. And before James left, I handed him $5,000 in $100 bills. And he never forgot that. And James Brown, through all his career, I sort of became his godfather. James Brown would not release a record unless he came to Florida and let me hear it first. All those King records, all those big hit records that he had. After he got through, I was gone. But he and I, Sid Nathan, had a falling out at the time, you know, over money, you know. Why didn't I get my regular money? Well, stories after stories, you know, all through the years until he passed away. James would send me before he released the record, I have my own label with James Brown, Brownstone Records. We put a label together. We had some pretty nice records.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
Kiss me hard before you go. Summertime sadness. I just wanted you to know that baby, you're the best. I got my red dress on tonight, dancing in the dark in the pale moonlight. Done my hair up real big, beauty queen style. High heels off, I'm feeling alive. Oh my God, I feel it in the air. Telephone wires above, I'm sizzling like a snail. Honey, I'm on fire, I feel it everywhere. Nothing scares me anymore. Kiss me hard before you go. Summertime sadness. I just wanted you to know that baby, you're the best. I got that summertime, summertime sadness. Got that summertime, summertime sadness. Got that summertime, summertime sadness. Oh, oh, oh. I'm feeling electric tonight. Cruising down the coast, going by 99. Got my bad baby by my heavenly side. I know if I go, I'll die happy tonight. Oh my God, I feel it in the air. Telephone wires above, I'm sizzling like a snail. Honey, I'm on fire, I feel it everywhere. Nothing scares me anymore. Kiss me hard before you go. Summertime sad.
If you give a little more than you take, and if you try to fix more than you break, if you're the kind who takes the time to help a stranger in the rain, there's a place for people like you. If you stand up for those down on their knees and lend a voice to those who cannot speak, if you shine a little light, give sight to the ones who've lost their way, there's a place for people like you. I've heard up there the streets are made of gold.
Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up, turn it up.
And when you get there, there's a hand to hold. I believe when your days down here are through, there's a place up there
for people like you. If you walk around with your heart on your sleeve, and if you're trying to be the change you wanna see, if you lay down your life for love so someone could be saved, there's a place for people like you.
Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up.
I've heard up there the streets are made of gold. And when you get there, there's a hand to hold. I believe when your days down here are through, there's a place up there for people like you.
Bye.